Riaz Akbar from The Guardian. I'm just assuming that everybody here knows about church politics and what's been going on with the Revision Committee and its U-turn on women bishops. When the Apostolic Constitution was announced last month, there was a hugely positive response from Anglo-Catholics in the Church of England, saying it's generous, it's more than we expected, and the language was very upbeat and positive. And at the same time, there was provision being made in the women bishops legislation for superflying male bishops. So it was a kind of an either-or. Now that's been taken off the table by the Revision Committee, the language has now changed, and people are saying, we have no choice, our hand is being forced, and we now have to make a decision. Now, I just wondered what your thoughts were on people who now see the Roman Catholic Church and conversion to Roman Catholicism as a last resort, because there's no alternative. It doesn't really seem like the kind of joyous acceptance of the faith that you would have hoped for. It sounds like they're doing it out of spite and because they don't really have any option, which is not reason to convert, surely.
I'm no expert on the politics of the Church of England. And the way in which views are expressed within the polity of the Church of England really does have to be carefully interpreted. But I clearly want to say unambiguously that anybody who seriously wants to perhaps take up the initiative that Pope Benedict has put in place needs to do it out of a conviction that this is the context in which they desire, long to live their Christian discipleship. And it therefore must be a positive desire in their heart, and one that centres round not questions of the ordination of women to the episcopate, not questions of sexual ethics, but it must centre round an understanding of the role of the office of the Bishop of Rome, the Petrine Ministry, as we call it, in the ongoing life of the Christian. So a person must be embracing of that concrete aspect of Catholic life, which is the authority of the Holy See in the person of the Pope, if they're going to make this journey with integrity.
What are the dangers if they don't? I mean, obviously you can't have a checklist of why are you converting.
Anyone who approaches the Catholic Church and seeks full communion, either as an individual or in a group, will always have to express individually and publicly their acceptance of the reality and the teaching of the Catholic Church. And that includes the office of the Pope, and it includes an understanding of the nature of the priesthood and all the rest of the things. So there is nothing is envisaged in this provision that the Pope has put in place of a kind of minimalist approach to picking bits of the Catholic faith that I like and then seeing myself, as it were, contained as a quasi-Catholic, not a real Catholic, but a quasi-Catholic under the umbrella of this apostolic constitution. Anybody who comes forward, and they're welcome to do so, must understand that they are coming into the full visible communion of the Catholic Church in England and Wales. The provision allows for us to be attentive to, responsive to, make provision for those elements of the Anglican tradition and patrimony which are consistent with Catholic teaching. But there is one reality of Catholic faith, and it is that everybody must be ready to embrace wholeheartedly. Thank you. Yes, go on. Well.
I've got two, if I may.
Yeah, yeah.
I've got four. Avril Ormsby, Reuters. I don't know. Avril Ormsby, Reuters.
Reuters, fine, thank you.
I don't know whether you saw Rowan Williams' speech last night, which he gave in Rome. It was quite interesting looking at the Telegraph and the Times interpretations of it, which seemed starkly different. What was your interpretation of it?
Do you know, I'm very sorry, I haven't seen the text.
Okay.
No, and that's just a fact. I need time to read it. Yeah,
you do need time.
Well,
it's a long speech. No, sorry, it's a long speech.
Yeah.
It's a very complicated speech.
Yeah.
And the other thing, the other is that the bishops' meeting, was there discussion of the apostolic constitution in which they referred to the possibility in theory that Church of England bishops could move over and take over certain elements of a bishop's role, and the fact that obviously the priests could become ordained within the church?
Well, on the first one, on the role envisaged in the apostolic constitution for a former bishop of the Church of England, that we didn't discuss that, no. But what the constitution suggests is that if they are in a leadership role in an ordinariate, if one comes into existence in this country, and I think in the short term that's far from clear, they would be exercising what we call ordinary jurisdiction. They would have responsibility for a section of the Catholic community, and therefore they would naturally have their place at the meeting of the Bishops' Conference. That's what it's about. That's what it's for. For those former bishops of the Church of England who are not in that position, but simply come into the Catholic Church and are ordained priests, it's a generous provision. And I'm sure the Bishops' Conference, if that came about, would be well able to cope with that. We too would be generous and welcome them.
Sorry, can I just do a follow-up? So there wasn't any... I mean, there has been comment that there might be resentment that married priests might be ordained.
Oh, sorry, yes, that was your second question.
Yes,
beg your pardon.
Yeah.
Over the past years, since 1996, we have received into the Catholic Church quite a number, I don't have the number to be quite honest with you, of men who were married and were Anglican clergy, and they, each with explicit permission from the Pope, have been ordained as priests of the Catholic Church. I don't think that has introduced additional tensions into the Catholic community. I think their situation is well understood. People always give their total respect to a decision of the Pope. And on the whole, I would say that development has proceeded quite smoothly. What is envisaged is a continuation of that. What is less clear in the Constitution is whether members of an ordinariate who are married already might come forward and be prepared for ordination in the Catholic Church. That's less clear, because it says in the Constitution, or in the norms, I think, that process, which would mean the presenting to the Pope of each individual case so that there is an exception to the rule of celibacy, would have to proceed by objective norms. Now, those norms have not been agreed. Personally, my own view is that I don't think that will develop into a parallel tradition in the Catholic Church of a married clergy. I think the objective norms will probably put quite a short time scale on it. Okay. Yep.
The Times seemed to suggest that there was going to be some kind of showdown between the Pope and the Archbishop of Canterbury, which I find very hard to believe from either side. And obviously there was the Archbishop, in a sort of typically nuanced way, suggested that, you know, you shouldn't let second order issues like female ordination get in the way of ecumenical relations. I mean, obviously you're in London and the Archbishop is in Rome, but is there any possibility that there could be a falling out between the two men?
No, I don't believe it, not for one minute. And I think sometimes press speculation, I think, is driven by the need to create interest of a kind that isn't necessarily related to the facts on the ground. The Archbishop of Canterbury is being received, I understand, with great courtesy, as is fitting for his status as the leader of the Anglican Communion. What I understand of his speech is that he highlights the substantive, ongoing issues that we continue to talk about at a theological level between the two churches. And he and I sat together not very long ago, reaffirming our commitment of the Church of England and the Catholic Church in this community, in this country, to work hard together. And I would expect the same confirmation to come from his meeting with the Holy Father as well, that the Catholic Church remains committed to the broad work of ecumenism worldwide. And I think that's what Cardinal Casper, who's in charge of that department of the Holy See for taking forward dialogue between churches, has already stated unambiguously.
Some of the Anglo-Catholics I've been speaking to say that one of the main sticking points in the creation of a personal ordinariate would be property. And there's a couple of ideas such as church sharing, or temporary buildings, or even long-term leases on Church of England property. And I just wonder if in your discussions the issue of property had come up at all, and what sorts of proposals have been on.
What we did in our meeting was to agree to establish a commission of our bishops to take their time now and to study these issues in more detail. That commission is the new Archbishop of Birmingham, Bernard Longley, Bishop Malcolm McMahon of Nottingham Diocese, and Bishop Alan Hopes, one of the auxiliaries here in Westminster. Bishop Hopes, as you know, was formerly an Anglican priest and understand these issues from that perspective as well. So they must now help the rest of us to prepare, and at least to, in our understanding, and be ready to respond if these requests come, a transitional process that gets people maybe who come forward sometime next year and say, there is a small group of us, we have our priest, we have our leader, we would like to follow the provisions here of this apostolic constitution. What the apostolic constitution gives us is an end game. It's the end game, it's not the process. And it's up to us, sensitively working with the Church of England, to look at the process whereby we might eventually arrive at that end game.
Following on from Simon's point, you said that it's about working with the Church of England. So is there going to be some kind of consultation between?
Yes.
Here are some people who want to come over. Can we talk about buildings?
We actually have done this over the past 10 years when a Church of England clergyman has wanted to come. On the whole, there has always been some contact with his authorities in the Church of England. And if there are groups, then I'm sure that the contact will be more substantial. When the Archbishop of Canterbury and I spoke about this some time ago now, I made it clear that we did not expect transfer of buildings. I mean, that's simply, on the most part, far too complicated. And he said, "Well, it is. It's barely possible." But we did say, you know, we could look at a more formal arrangement where we might share the use of buildings. But those are things down the road. And as I say, we have established a group of bishops with some advisors who will take a steady look at these matters.
So just
okay.
One last question.
Back
to what you, your answer to my earlier question about a short timescale. Can I just clarify that and double check? Are you saying there might be a time limit on when a married priest might look to?
No. What I was talking about there was the possibility, which is in the Apostolic Constitution and its complementary norms, that a man who is married and has never been a priest, okay, not somebody who is now a priest of the Church of England, but somebody in the ordinary, looking down the road, might, as a married man, say, "I have a call to priesthood," and that the leadership of the ordinariate, as it is written, would have the right to put his name forward to the Holy See for approval by the Pope as an exception to the rule of celibacy. But then it adds, according to objective criteria. And those objective criteria still have to be talked about. And my guess is that what we will not see is a long-term possibility of married men coming forward for ordination within the Catholic Church. I think the norm of celibacy, which is written in the Constitution as the norm pro regula, as the rule, is not going to change.